Support for WMNF comes from our members in the new Q2 Wi-Fi radio. The portable Wi-Fi radio cube allows one to listen to WMNF anytime, anywhere, in the home, at the office, or around the world via Wi-Fi. For more information, you can go to Q2Radio.com. I'm Duncan Strauss, really delighted to be bringing you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll discuss Darlin's Darlin's, a Polk City animal sanctuary with its founder and namesake, Darlene Zerner. First, though, we're kicking off the show with an animal tune. This is the Beatles, and your bird can sing here on Talking Animals. That was a little band called The Beatles with And Your Bird Can Sing, an animal tune by our definition at least, and a song that will be performed this Saturday at Rubber Revolver, a WMNF event in which the Ditch Flowers and Friends will perform Rubber Soul and Revolver in their entirety, in order, at the Largo Cultural Center. So you can get tickets through the Largo Cultural Center. You can get more information by going to WMNF.org. My name is Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with today's guest, Darlin Zerner, founder of Darlin's Darlin's, an animal sanctuary advocacy and education organization located in Polk City in the great state of Florida. Billing itself a farm animal rescue mission, Darlin's Darlin's houses upwards of 200 animals, not just farm animals, but also dogs, cats, rabbits, and more. We'll discuss the struggles and triumphs of this largely one-woman operation presently with Darlene Zerner here on Talking Animals. And while speaking with Darlene, we'll also welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663 or by email at dj@wmnf.org. Also, a bit later in the show, we'll step into the Comedy Corner. We'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a copy of Dancing Dogs, the new collection of short stories by our recent guest, New York Times bestselling author, John Katz. It's our last copy, so it's a hot item, if you ask me. Right now, though, it's time for the Animal News and Announcements segment, a look at items of interest in animal news, as well as announcements of local events on the horizon, produced, as always, by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department. Our first item involves last week's guest, Lori Crawford, president of the Animal Network in Manatee County. And we discuss, of course, among other topics, their impending 14th Annual Canine Christmas Festival, where the activities included trying to set a new world record, as certified by the Guinness folks, for the most dogs in a sit-stay in one place. And checked with Lori, and sadly, they fell just short, but it was a hell of an effort, and there's always next year, right?
Right.
All right, Also on the local front, but boy, now with sort of international reverberations, is the story about Phoebe that you probably, from one way or another, heard about, read about, saw something about. Phoebe is the pit bull who was shot twice and then buried up to her, buried alive up to her neck at a vegan home east of Tampa. And anyway, so she was pulled out of there, and she is getting all kinds of medical treatment. And I heard from the folks at Hillsborough County Animal Services there who are looking after her that she's actually doing remarkably well, given what she's been through. So, but obviously a horrible, horrible story. Like I say, it's made the rounds nationally and internationally. And if you are suitably horrified and want to help in one way or another, there is a fund that's been set up both to help cover Phoebe's medical care costs and also to sort of bolster the reward fund to help bring whoever did this to get them arrested and prosecuted for that horrible crime. So there's the nonprofit Friends of HCAS. It's a volunteer nonprofit that's administering the reward fund. And you can go to friendsofhcas.org, friendsofhcas.org. And you can make a tax-deductible donation there, which, again, helps with Phoebe's recovery and medical care. And just makes a bigger and bigger reward as well for trying to catch the awful culprits of this. So, get well, Phoebe, and I guess there's quite a long line. I mean, geez, seeing this story and seeing pictures of Phoebe, who I've seen a couple pictures now sort of on her way to recovery, and she looks very good and very, very sweet. And I guess there's quite a number of inquiries of people made who want to adopt Phoebe when she is well and ready to go home. So that's good. I like to get in that line myself. So get well, Phoebe, and let's find those non-FCC appropriate word is what I like to say right now, but let's try to get them. Now, on a kind of related note, just I guess we probably speak a disproportionate amount about pit bulls on the show, but there's a reason for that, and of course, often because they get sort of unfair and sort of distorted press and media coverage and just sort of a bad image. So in the wake of the Phoebe thing, I just wanted to allude to a story I just saw this morning about Fiona Apple. We're big fans of hers and have been for many years, and actually offered some amazing tickets to see her local show at Ruth Eckert on the most recent tour as a fund drive premium or thank you gift. But anyway, just shortly, I'll just say Fiona Apple has canceled her South American tour stops in a very public and very emotional way. The singer, who was set to begin the tour in Porto Alegre, Brazil on November 27th, took to her Facebook page to post an image of the four-page handwritten letter she wrote to fans. And, well, I'll just read part of it here. "I can't come to South America. Not now," Apple wrote in the letter. "My dog has Addison's disease, which makes it dangerous for her to travel since she needs regular injections of cortisol because she reacts to stress and to excitement without the physiological tools which keep most of us from literally panicking to death." And it goes on from there, and, I guess perhaps needless to say, given my introduction, Janet is a pit that that I think Fiona got when she was 4 months old, and she's had her 14 years. Anyway, find the letter on Facebook, and if you don't get teary at some point, I know that you're a better man than I. But anyways, hang in there, Fiona Apple, as well. Now, another story we've covered quite a bit the last few weeks, and I was not here last week, so I had pre-recorded the show the week before, so I kind of alluded to that in this context, and that's the oxen from Green Mountain College, Lou and Bill. And didn't know as of last week, of course, because I had recorded the week before what was happening. Well, in short, Lou got more and more sort of medically challenged. Or at least that's what the college says. So they euthanized Lou. So Bill is still around, but so many other issues swirling around this, including that, you know, they still had troubles when their plan was to slaughter both of them to provide meat for the campus dining facility or service. Slaughterhouses in and around that area, I guess, were just buried with threats. And anyway, but even in the wake of euthanizing Lou, there's a thing here, a New York Times blog piece that came out about a week or so ago. It says, many on the campus in Pulteney, Vermont, viewed Lou's demise as a wasteful and unnecessary end to a frustrating public relations battle. Quote, it's really sad to me, wasting 2,000 pounds of meat and putting it into the ground to decompose, said Bailey Drown, an assistant farm manager at Green Mountain College, and still having the end result, having the oxen being dead. So I know there continues to be people weighing in and sort of registering their horror and protest at Green Mountain College, and I'd just like to say in the meantime, rest in peace, Lou. Now, most people kind of know what they're doing for Thanksgiving tomorrow, where they're going. But some people like to go multiple locations. Some people kind of like to play it a little bit loose and say, well, maybe I'll go here for a bit. Maybe I'll see if there's something else going on. So with that in mind, as a last-minute possible option for you to consider, Tampa Bay's veg community is offering their 7th annual Thanks Vegan Feast. And so there'll be about 300 vegetarians, vegans, veg-curious people, and their friends and family will meet up once again from 1:30 to 5:30 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Temple Terrace. And that's sponsored by Florida Voices for Animals and a coalition of local vegan and animal rights advocates. So says here you can expect to see a stunning selection of delicious home-cooked dishes and desserts with gravy-smothered tofurkies donated by Turtle Island Foods, celebration roasts, and egg and dairy-free treats from Whole Foods, etc. So all are welcome, including children and non-vegetarians, and you either bring a dish and or pay some money that we can't really specify, of course, here on the air. But you can find out a lot more by going to thanksvegan.com. That's the website for information. It's not too late, as I understand it, to join the festivities. So, and of course, Thanksgiving and Thanks Vegan weekend, big movie-going weekend. So sort of, I guess, kind of related to that. Read a little bit of this story that's been making the rounds. With a computer-generated tiger at the center of the upcoming Life of Pi, a controversy over live animals is brewing on a different holiday release. Wranglers in New Zealand have complained that as many as 27 animals have died as a result of conditions on the set of The Hobbit, an unexpected journey, according to the Associated Press. The Wranglers said that a series of sinkholes and other perils on farms made the conditions a death trap for the animals. A spokesman for Director Peter Jackson has confirmed an unspecified number of deaths related to conditions on a Wellington farm. Horses, goats, and sheep were among the casualties, he told the AP. He said that when production supervisors learned of the conditions, they quickly moved to fix them. And subsequently, I did see Warner Brothers Pictures and New Line Cinema joined Peter Jackson and the producers of The Hobbit in vigorously refuting and condemning accusations of animal abuse on the films. The production acted swiftly and responsibly in addressing any incidents involving animals in its care through the long filming process. And in fact, measures were taken to protect all farm animals, including those uninvolved with the films. It goes on to say in this official statement, we question the timing of this misinformation given The Hobbit's imminent release and have no recourse other than to reveal that the primary source of these new allegations can be traced to freelance animal wranglers who were dismissed by the production over a year ago for cause. We're immensely proud of our association with Sir Peter Jackson, his dedicated film crew, and the people of New Zealand. So, there you have it. We'll come back hopefully to some more animal news and announcements later on in the show. Right now, though, it's time to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. And with darlings in mind, I wanted to play a farm-oriented piece today. This is Drew Hastings with a portion of a piece called Farming 101 on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
Well, it's probably obvious to most of you that I'm a farmer. That's essentially what I do. I farm. Believe it or not, I have not farmed that long. I've only been a farmer about 2 years. I've been an urban guy my whole life. I lived in New York, Los Angeles. I lived in San Francisco for a while. And, you know, I was coming on 50, and I said, you know what? To hell with this. I'm going to go back to Midwest where I'm from. I'm going to get myself a farm. You know? Well, I'll be honest. I don't even know how I got a farm. My credit score is 6. I had to use my Speedway points on my financial statement. So I get this farm, and I don't know how many of you here have ever lived rural or in the country, but Jesus, it is creepy out there. If you're not, it is creepy. They'll tell you, at night, sun goes down, pitch black. Did you know that at night, possum, walking through a cornfield sounds exactly like 3 men with an axe. Yeah. And what kind of owl makes this sound? You're gonna die. I kid you not, I am not making this up. My place is so far out there, Domino's Pizza will not deliver to me. I've never even heard of anything. Like, I call Domino's now. Oh, we don't come that far. You're gonna have to drive up Newmarket Community Center. Pull in the parking lot, flash your lights, we'll meet you. Like it's a drug deal. Do you have the pizza? Yes, do you have the money? Of course I got the money! Did anyone follow you here? They all drive tractors, for Christ's sakes!
All right. That was Drew Hastings with a portion of a piece called Farming 101, taken from his album Irked and Miffed. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to speak with today's guest, Darlin Zerner, who founded and runs Darlin's Darlin, the Animal Sanctuary and more in Polk City. So with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Darlin Zerner to Talking Animals. Hello, Darlin.
Hello. Hi. How are you this morning?
Good. Thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So let's really kind of start at the beginning. It's always a good place to start. So if I'm not mistaken, your history, I mean, overall, sort of pre-official Darlin's maybe, involves 2 states and informally at least the better part of 20 years. So maybe you could just sort of take us through how Darlin's got started in the very sort of beginning of your path.
Well, the very beginning was back in Tennessee when we rescued this little dog that was running down the road. But the real beginning of Darlin's was here in St. Cloud, where I had a minor stroke, and I was off of work. I worked for a driver's license. And when I went back to work, there was this little pig under the storage shed out back. And I thought it was a joke when they first talked to me about it, but sure enough, it wasn't. So I captured it and brought it home because it was right around Easter, and I was fearful for its safety. Well, I had no intention of keeping this little pig, and when I began my search to find an appropriate place for it to be safe to live out its life, I came to the abrupt realization that there are very few safe places for a pig. So the pig became part of my family. Once the pig became part of my family, I began to acquire a whole new awareness about animals.
And how was that first, Darlin, when it sounds like there just wasn't any place for you to sort of take this pig, so sort of by default, the pig did become part of your family. I mean, what was that like in the beginning? Because, sounds from your description that you weren't exactly expecting that to be the outcome, number one, and maybe weren't at that point all that experienced with pigs, number two.
Well, in the beginning, I can't tell you that I was one of those folks that was always wanted to help animals. I'm from Miami originally, and animals were animals, and people were people, and there was a very distinct line for me, like there is for so many other people. This little pig, however, somehow managed to worm her way into our hearts. She ate the walls in the kitchen. She screamed bloody murder. I was serving on the Board of Adjustment in St. Cloud at that time, and the neighbor came knocking on the door and asked us if we were allowed to have a pig in the city limits. That became a problem, so we moved to Lake Wales. But this little pig, once we got to know her and realized that she was not a lot different than the two dogs and the two cats that we had at the time, everything started to change. We rescued a couple of other pigs that we didn't intend to rescue. They were supposed to go to another sanctuary, but that sanctuary didn't have room that day. Mm-hmm. And then we took them to be spayed and neutered and found out that the females were pregnant and about to give birth. While I don't think we should be making more animals of any kind, I'm not willing to kill animals that are going to be born in a week. I just don't think that's right. And so that's actually how Darwin's Drawings became a sanctuary. Those babies were born. We decided to keep them. I thought, well, gee, I'll found a nonprofit. People will donate to take care of these animals the same as they do dogs and cats and humane societies and so forth. And that's the sum total of how it happened.
Sure. And what was the name of that first pig that sort of got it all started for you?
Oh, Lucy.
Lucy?
Yeah, Lucy.
Okay.
She was beautiful.
And so really it sounds like that the Lucy sort of experience was in retrospect turned out to be a fairly momentous development. And I mean, back then, especially when the baby pigs came along and stuff, I mean, to what extent were you aware that, hey, we're especially for people that, you know, thought, hey, animals and animals or people are people, we're sort of peeling off in a very unusual or unexpected direction. I mean, were you aware of that, or were you just sort of in the middle of it at the time and didn't really have a chance to step back and think of it that way?
Actually, I did step back and think of it that way, and it was a kind of a epiphany, if you will, because our culture teaches us as little children that animals are wonderful, and then as we grow, our culture teaches us that we should disregard this learning that we have that's innate to us. Because if you take a little child and bring them out here to this sanctuary and you watch them with the animals, they have that understanding. And we kind of summarily beat it out of them so that it's okay to have the pig on your plate or the cow on your plate. You know, it's a terrible thing that we do, and I don't think that it's good for us psychologically or emotionally.
And do you find that, I don't know how often visitors come out to the sanctuary, but do you find that even if they're not kids, in the way that you were just making that observation, that by seeing pigs up close and the other animals too, but up close like that, that people do make those connections more readily?
I think it gives them the opportunity to make those connections.
Mm-hmm.
I think people are a little afraid to think outside the box. There are tremendous implications when you all of a sudden become aware of something that is so opposed to something that you've believed all your life, like cows are food. Pigs are food.
Mm-hmm.
No, they're not. They're individuals. And when you come out here and you meet the animals who live here, all of whom have names, and you talk to them and they lay at your feet and expect you to pay attention to them, and it's a whole different experience that people often do not have the opportunity to have. It's not like going to the zoo and looking at the animal over the fence. Or through the wall,
mm-hmm.
or between the bars.
Yeah, it's more direct and immediate.
Yeah.
And so, well, I want to sort of come back and maybe explore that in a moment, but I'm curious that you know, when there was Lucy and then there was the baby pigs that you decided, hey, well, we'll, you know, hang on to them and we'll try to do this. I mean, did it feel like you were thinking, hey, our lives are sort of being irretrievably altered? Because, you know, you're at that point, you're really making a commitment to look after at least those animals at that moment, not a decision at least, you know, most people can retreat from. And so that's usually a permanent ongoing commitment, even if people don't fully comprehend that at the moment. I mean, were you sort of just into it and felt, all right, well, this is unexpected, but we're just going to go with it, and this is going to be kind of our lives, or at least kind of largely characterize our lives from this point forward?
Well, what the truth is I never thought it would grow to be the size that it is.
Right.
I mean, that made 24 pigs, and then the two dogs and the two cats, and I didn't see that as a particularly big deal. You know, as a nonprofit, if people threw a couple of dollars our way, that would pay for the food, and you know, you take care of a couple of dozen animals, it's not that big a deal.
Yeah.
When we did the big rescue out of Osceola County back in 2003, I believe it was, Animal Control had called, and this man and his wife, I guess, or girlfriend, had a couple of pigs. And they had allowed indiscriminate breeding. Mm-hmm. And Animal Control was going to come in and shoot these animals where they stood. Mm. Well, about half, there were 68 of them, and half of them were females, and all of them were pregnant, several generations inbred. And we did that rescue, and that's how we got to be as large as we are at this time. I really never anticipated becoming this big an organization. And as time passed, then I got it about all the other animals, that the cows weren't different from the pigs, weren't different from the chickens, weren't different from the sheep, weren't different from any other animal.
Yeah.
And the connections just kept going and kept going and kept going until life was different. And the view of life and everything that we believed became different.
And how so? That'd be really interesting, because it sounds like, again, what you said sort of in the first part of the conversation was that, you know, you grew up sort of a certain way and believing a certain thing about animals are this and people are that. So when you were younger, what were you imagining your life would look like as compared with how it, you know, sort of obviously really, really changed, especially after that rescue in 2003 with, you know, the sort of population explosion at your facility?
Well, to tell you the truth, very shortly before that, I expected to be retired by now and living quite comfortably with three homes. Two of them paying for the third one. I mean, mm-hmm. I had a great plan.
Yeah.
We were going to enjoy life, and we were going to be all about ourselves, like we're taught to be from the time we're children.
Right.
you know, that's what we're taught, right?
Yeah.
It's not a particularly benevolent culture that teaches us we should care about everything but ourselves. We should care about ourselves, and if there's anything left, then we could care about that a little bit.
Sure, if there's room, yeah.
But anyway, so I really thought we'd be retired by now and living quite comfortably and not having to work unless we wanted to work and doing what we wanted and traveling a little bit. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I don't see that before I die.
Well, so this raises a kind of, I think, an interesting sort of more specific point, darling, is that, before and certainly, I guess, after, too, like that sort of pivotal 2003 rescue, I mean, there's obviously some important decisions that you faced about taking in animals because it sounded like it was pretty modest before that 2003 experience. I mean, were you at that, by that time, just sort of a mind like, hey, maybe even though we wouldn't have guessed this or expected it, or maybe even wanted this in one version of the story, maybe this is kind of our calling, and so we're just going to keep you know, helping out these animals as they need us?
I'm not sure what your question is here.
Well, I'm just wondering if, you know, what sort of decisions that you faced either before the 2003 thing in particular or just generally, because it sounds like, you know, it really sort of was an important, huge decision because, as you say, you picked up, you know, a better part of 70 animals, and along the way you must have had some decisions to make about taking in animals, what that would mean for you, your life, for the facility. And whether it was before that, you know, you obviously responded to that call from the folks at the county. You know, was there grappling with that, or by that time did you already feel like, hey, this is kind of, as it turns out, this is sort of our mission, and that's, we're just not going to say no?
I don't know about the not going to say no thing. We've been saying no for a while now simply because we don't have what I consider to be adequate funding to continue to take in animals. In addition, we're getting older.
Sure.
I mean, any young animals are going to be in a race for who's going to live longer, them or us.
Right.
You know, and it's so as far as taking in animals, unless it's some kind of a really extreme situation, we kind of back away from that now and hope to get all the ones that are here safely to the end of their lives with all the medical care they need. It is a no-kill facility. An animal gets sick, we don't just put it down because it's inconvenient or going to cost money. It goes to the vet, and the vet is in Cape Coral because that's the only one who I've been able to find that, number one, knows very much about pigs specifically,
mm-hmm.
And who is willing to cut us a break in terms of the finances and the amount, you know, give us any kind of a discount. Now, you have to understand, we also have dogs and cats here. I've got several dozen cats and over a dozen dogs, and they all need care, too. As a matter of fact, I've got one right now that I just had a tumor removed from, and I'm waiting to hear back on the lab. I don't think it's a very good situation, to tell you the truth.
Oh, geez. I'm sorry to hear that. Well, yeah, let me just first let folks know this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, we're speaking with Darlene Zerner, founder of the Polk City Animal Sanctuary called Darlin's Darlins. If you'd like to ask Darlene a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, or you can email us that question or comment at dj@wmnf.org. So let's meet some of the residents. Let's obviously, I think we should start with the pigs. How many pigs are there now there?
Oh, last count, probably 181.
181 pigs?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. And so I guess the population explosion continued over the years, specifically of pigs. And how many of those are potbelly pigs?
Maybe half.
Mm-hmm. And for people listening, what distinguishes potbelly pigs from the other pigs? I guess we'll talk about some of the other pigs you have there as well. But
they call potbelly pigs miniature pigs. And people get the idea that if they get a miniature pig or a potbelly pig, it's going to be a little bitty thing that they can put in their pocket and carry around. Well, a miniature pig is something that is somewhat smaller or considerably smaller than a farm pig, which could weigh 600 or 700 pounds. If it's left to grow and be. Of course, you have to understand, most farm pigs don't get to be that because we kill them when they're about 6 months old and call them baby back ribs.
Mm-hmm.
They really are,
yeah.
Baby back ribs. So potbelly pigs are smaller.
Mm-hmm.
I also have pigs that are partially potbelly pigs and partially feral pigs, or partially potbelly, partially farm and feral. It's quite a population of mixed up kinds of pigs.
So I take it pigs can and do breed quite readily across species.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
That's why they're all neutered in space.
For sure.
They do not breed pigs.
And do they
or any other animals?
And Darlene, do they all get along pretty well with each other, regardless of what species or mix of species they might be?
Well, there's an adjustment period, and as far as the mixes of species, because of the size is bigger and smaller, you kind of have to segregate them according to size, as far as feeding time goes, because needless to say, the bigger pigs would crowd out the littler pigs, and then you could develop a problem.
Sure.
But as far as getting along together, yes, they do. We have a very large pig, as a matter of fact. His name is Homer. And he looks out after the other pigs who may not be able to fend for themselves so well because they're older or what have you. And he lets them eat with him.
Oh, so
anybody who comes near, he shoos them away so that the ones that need to be cared for. See, that's the thing that people don't get to see. They don't get to see how animals are not different than us.
And along those lines, is Homer was Homer at a Veg Fest the year before last?
No, Homer was not a Veg Fest.
Okay, because I can't remember the name of the pig. I thought it might have been Homer. I met a pig of yours at Veg Fest year before last, who I was, like, instantly enchanted with. I just can't quite remember his name. But
his name was Wilbur.
Well, oh, God. You think of all things I could remember Wilbur the pig. But,
well, we have three of those.
Okay. All right. So, So Homer kind of looks after the younger ones or the smaller ones and makes sure nothing goes awry at feeding time or otherwise.
Oh, yes, he does. And the others are the same, you know. I mean, animals look after each other, and when you're close up to them like we've been for so long, and you observe their behavior, and you observe their groups, and you observe how they interact with each other, you somehow come to realize that there is a misconception in the way we look at animal others.
And what is that misconception?
Well, the misconception is that we're so different than they are.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, we do build buildings, and yes, we do drive cars, and yes, we do destroy the planet, but we're not different. They have family groups. They enjoy family groups. They enjoy having friends. They enjoy playing together. They enjoy the things that we've forgotten to enjoy because we're so busy getting and being and that sort of thing.
And you know, it's often said about pigs that they're highly, highly intelligent. Is that when you've got 181 pigs sitting there, you're probably in an extremely good position to comment on that?
Oh, yeah. They're very, very intelligent, and they try us every day.
Yeah.
Every day.
Oh, so they're not only smart, they're trying to outsmart you, it sounds like, at times.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Being one step ahead of the pig.
Yeah. So,
but you see, the dogs and cats are the same.
Right.
Well, you actually observe them.
Yeah. No, that's true. That's true. So what are, I want to come back to find out more about some of the other animals that live there, but one thing I do want to talk about related to pigs and some of the other animals is to what extent that you guys, I think, do some adoption in sort of select circumstances, and are pigs among the animals that under the right circumstances are made available for adoption?
Under the right circumstances, that's correct.
And go ahead.
Oh, but because we are a culture of throwaway things, and we are the same with our animals, dogs and cats, your regular animals that everybody knows how to relate to, and we have a local SPCA that kills 500 a month because people lost their home, got a divorce, had to move, whatever the story is. Whereby the animal is the last thing on the list, and it's expendable.
Yeah.
And when the time comes, we'll just get another one. Well, because pigs are so smart, and because they do challenge you on a regular basis, they're probably not appropriate pets for everybody.
Yeah.
They're appropriate pets for some people. I would have said in the beginning that they were not appropriate pets for me because I was all about myself. However, I was able to make the transition to being about them.
Right.
And I don't think everybody is willing or able, necessarily able, to do that.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like a very kind of case-by-case, even more than it might be, let's say, with the, some of the dogs and cats that you have there that you've alluded to. That if
exactly.
Some,
and, that's very true.
And so there sounds like pretty strict criteria but that you would kind of really need to follow before somebody would even be eligible to adopt one of those pigs.
Right. There's a wonderful girl that adopted our Miss Piggy. She lives in Sanford. She came out here for weekends. She's a biology major. She does dog rescue, as a matter of fact, so she gets it about animals. But
yeah.
And she always thought she wanted a pig. And she came out, and she was here, and she visited with all these animals. And she wanted a little pig. And we have several little pigs, what you could call littler pigs.
Right. It's all pretty relative, yeah.
Right. And she wanted one of those. But this pig, Miss Piggy, is a big pig now. She's probably 3.5 feet long. She's a big pig, and she's an older pig.
Mm.
And Miss Piggy loved this girl. She followed her everywhere. Well, Miss Piggy lives with her now.
Okay.
And Miss Piggy has a wonderful, wonderful life.
Well, that's great. Sounds like exactly how that situation should go.
Exactly.
Yeah. Again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. We're discussing the Polk City Animal Sanctuary Darlin's with its founder, Darlin Zerner. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have any questions or comments about pigs or other animals or the facility there, you can call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. Well, Darlin, I just want to make sure we don't run out of time to hit some other important things. So we might come back to some of the animals, but let's say that someone is interested, even if it's not in the pig, because again, that sounds like kind of a sort of a more specific set of steps and circumstances before they would be able to adopt. But it sounds like you've got a number of dogs and cats there and other animals. I mean, how does someone qualify to adopt any one of the animals before it gets into which specific animal?
I think it has to do with maybe their history. Have you had an animal before? What kind of animal did you have before? Where is that animal now?
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there's the home check to make sure that there are appropriate surroundings for the animal.
Mm-hmm.
There was a gentleman one time who approached me about adopting a pig. He rented his place. He had a disabled child, which wasn't particularly an issue with me.
Mm-hmm.
But the yard was not fenced, and so it was a problem. That pig's name is Dave. That pig lives with me now. He adopted it from somebody else who was willing to give him a pig just because he wanted one.
Mm.
And it became a problem for him.
Yeah.
Which I could see that it would be because I know about them. I know the problems that people are going to have with pigs. And so if I can find a right situation for one or two, that's a great thing. Pairs is good, too, so that they have company. I think animals should have one of their own kind to relate to, no matter how much the people love them. You know, we'd be hard on an island with nothing but other animals, most people.
Right. All right. So obviously, I guess one thing we should tell people is that to find out about this and other things, or at least to first get in touch, they can just go to the website, Darlin's Darlin's. So it's DARLYNNS, Darlin's, DARLINS. There's no G at the end of that, .org. So it's Darlin's Darlin's .org. And, clearly there are a lot of mouths to feed there. How is this all funded? I mean, you mentioned earlier on that you thought, hey, when you first had that first batch of baby pigs, hey, we'll become a nonprofit. People will support us. It'll work out fine. I'm guessing, you know, along the way, long before you got to 181, pigs, that you found out that it wasn't quite that simple getting that kind of funding.
Well, it isn't simple because I think one of the reasons is because it's difficult for people to wrap their minds around saving and supporting animals they want on their plate.
Yeah.
That's a big hurdle that quite frankly, I hadn't given much thought to because I can't imagine them on my plate anymore.
Yeah.
We have donations from grocery stores of produce, which we feed. We have a wonderful place out west that donates us a ton of feed each and every month.
Great.
That's recent, and it is a blessing I can't believe after so long.
Sure.
We also get donations of bakery products, and there's a gentleman who always is in the wings kind of watching out to make sure that everything goes along all right.
Oh, good.
And the animals remain safe.
You have a little guardian angel there, right?
A little guardian angel.
Sounds like the counterpart to Homer, if I follow you correctly. So,
right?
Yeah.
Kind of the same.
Yeah.
He just makes sure that nothing gets really out of control.
Right. And also, of course, I would assume that people, you know, that are listening and maybe weren't familiar with Darlin's Donuts before could also go to the website and just make a monetary donation if they wanted to kind of help keep Wilbur and Homer and everybody else fed.
Yeah, that would be a wonderful thing, and they can come out, too. I'm a firm believer in people supporting animal rescues, people who are interested in animals, whether it's dogs, cats, whatever it is. I think they should really find a local sanctuary or a local rescue.
Yeah.
And go out and see the work they do and see what their intentions are and see where their money's actually going. Because another thing that I found out in the 11 years of doing this is things are not always as they seem or as you think they are.
Yeah. Well, and that's great, too, because a lot of sanctuaries, for one reason or another, and sometimes it's specific to the kind of animals they have, and sometimes it's just kind of the philosophy that's counter to yours, don't really welcome visitors or just do it in very, very select circumstances in a given year. And, you know, I kind of like the idea that you have is like, hey, yeah, come out, you know, see what we're doing, see, you know, that it's just kind of as we presented. And the other thing related to that, and then we're just sort of nearing the end of our time here, I'm afraid, but I would hope too that people either listening or especially if they come out and visit or either way, might well be inclined to help out. It sounds like there's a lot of feeding and cleaning and other work to do. And so I assume you welcome, volunteers.
Oh, I certainly do.
Yeah. So again,
volunteers would be a wonderful thing to have because we don't have too many of those either. This is what we do here is work. It's not go in and clean the clean.
Yeah.
You know, it's work. You have to be committed. It's not easy.
Yeah. But again, it's good hard work, right? Because you're helping these animals, right? And
well, that's for sure. And they show you just exactly how grateful they are when they look at you.
Yeah.
You can see how much they appreciate that somebody gets it about them.
That's great. That's great. Well, I'm sure that along the way, those kind of looks are kind of what's helped fuel you and kept you going all these years.
That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, Darlin, I really appreciate your time. Again, we've been speaking with Darlin Zerner from Darlin's Darlins. And again, it's Darlin, D-A-R-L-Y-N-N. It's Darlin's Darlins, D-A-R-L-I-N-S.org is the website. They're also on Facebook, and you can just search for them there and see some of the nice animals. But the website's full of all the cool animals. And again, you can find out more about donating and volunteering and some of the other work that they do. So thanks, Darlin, so much for making the time to join us today on Talking Animals.
Oh, thank you so much.
All right.
Have a great Thanksgiving.
Same to you. All right. Take
bye.
Care. All right. Bye-bye. All right. I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals. The show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to Name That Animal Tune. This is a giveaway. You do not need to be a WMF member to win. There'll be a prize, a copy of Dancing Dogs, the new collection of short stories by John Katz to the first person. Sorry, technical difficulties. We're in a different studio. Having trouble. To the first one to call the correct title of this animal tune, which hooks into WMF's. All right, maybe we'll have to come back to that. Sorry. Anyways, we're just going to have to move on. Okay, too bad. All right, so we have pretty much reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. And we'll be back next Wednesday, November 28th, when our guest will be Carol Baskin, the founder and CEO of Big Cat Rescue in Tampa, the largest accredited sanctuary in the world dedicated entirely to abused and abandoned big cats, with more than 100 exotic big cats living there. Baskin and Big Cat Rescue are also deeply involved in legislative efforts to end the captive trade in big cats and in halting the so-called pay-to-play operations by which people can pet and have their pictures taken with big cat cubs in malls and elsewhere. So we'll discuss all that and more next Wednesday, November 28th. I hope you'll join us. Also, if you visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. Please like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. All right, I'm determined. I'm coming back to that Name That Animal tune. So let's try it again. So if you are the first person to call in, 813-239-9663, and can name this animal tune, we will get you a copy of that Dancing Dogs by John Katz. And again, this hooks into WMF's Rubber Revolver Tribute. Keep in mind the full title of this one. 813-239-9663. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. Hi, you're on Talking Animals. Can you name that animal tune? Hi, you're on Talking Animals. Can you name that animal tune?
Yeah, Norwegian Wood, the Beatles.
Well, okay, but we need the full title, otherwise it won't be an animal song.
You got me. Okay, so.
All right, close enough.
I have the book, though.
All right. Well, it's Norwegian Wood. Parenthetically, this bird has flown, so that's close enough. So,
okay.
Cool. What's your first name, sir?
My name's Bruce. I'm in Sarasota. Sarasota Bruce.
Sarasota Bruce. Okay, Sarasota Bruce, I'm going to put you on hold and get your information and send you off a copy of the new John Katz book. You'll really like it. Thanks for listening. Congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. So there you go. And, again, that's all sort of hooked to our great Rubber Revolver tribute. The Ditch Flowers and Friends are performing Rubber Soul and Revolver in order in their entirety, song by song, this Saturday, November 24th at the Largo Cultural Center. So you can get the tickets through Largo Cultural Center at this point, but you can find out more at our website, WMNF.org. You just can't get the tickets there. So anyway, all right, let's carry on. Talking Animals Broadcast Outreach Consultant is Libby Busalis. My thanks to her. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Happy Thanksgiving and happy thanks vegan to you and yours. Stay tuned for the wonderful Scott Elliott and the All Souls edition of It's the Music, airing next, noon to 3. And we're closing out today's show with an animal song, sort of, by way of new music from David Byrne and St. Vincent. This is I Am an Ape, taking us up to the NPR News on WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Wachee, and beyond. Thanks for listening. Speak with you again next week on Talking Animals, 11 a.m. Wednesday. Have a great day and a great holiday weekend. Thanks for listening. Take care.
In a garden stands a statue of the man who won the war. His expression, tender yearning, every nation. Son and ancient father, sweet as honey, tough as leather. monster beast, a hairy beast. I move so fast, but I take a chance and come up close. I'm not a ghost.
Navigator, when you wake up and you step outside your door, shoes and panties, wash them for you, taking off your journey clothes. This garden tells a story, amber close up, faded glory, running through the streets on Christmas. Masterpiece, a hairy beast, try not to laugh.